Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025 The Game. Caroline Fenton is here. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, how we doing?
Absolutely fantastic. Ian Safar is here. How are you, Ian?
Good, thank you.
So it's a Fireball Hot Take Friday. We are streaming on Twitter / Periscope and YouTube and everywhere else that we stream. And I would like to say that getting a lot of people that have reached out to me saying that what they'll do is they'll throw it up on YouTube. So you can just go ahead and put YouTube in. That's what I do every morning. I work out here at the house. I throw on either ESPN or Robbie and Rex Road. And honestly, I usually throw on Robbie and Rex Road and I get all worked up watching it. So today was no different. Joe said something categorically ridiculous. I forget what it is, but I can't, you know, it's been a very, very long day. It is a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Who watched a Hall of Fame game last night?
I did not.
Why'd you not watch a Hall of Fame game?
So I'm doing this new thing where I try a new restaurant every week, and that is what I did last night instead of watching the Hall of Fame game. Sometimes I need like a little bit of a sports break. For a little bit.
So you picked the one night of the week that a football game came on?
Well, sometimes I feel like I'm drinking sports from
You don't love the NFL. You don't love the NFL. That's what it is.
Don't give me that.
Don't turn
that around on me.
If Caroline Fenn's going to come on the air and say that I don't love college football.
I took a mental health
She takes off the Hall of Fame game.
I took a mental health night. I do love the NFL. I love the NFL, unlike you with college football, because I know that you absolutely detest it. You just won't accept it.
So here's my notes from today's Titans practice. I believe this is today's. Yes, today's practice where we got, 80 plus 1, 88 plus 1, 12 minus 1, 10 plus 1, 82 minus 1. Let's put CF minus 1.
That's fine.
On her love for the NFL. Ian, did you watch Hall of Fame game last night?
Not a second.
I knew you didn't. See, I knew both of you guys didn't watch that Hall of Fame game last night.
You didn't know that I didn't
watch
it.
And I got to get on Ian now, too. I got to get on Ian.
I was,
because
you know,
how
downstairs.
Can you watch that Nashville SC game the other night where they're trying to tie? They're plaguing to tie.
Well, one game actually matters and one game does not.
It didn't matter. They tied. It doesn't
matter.
It's
a regular season game. So
they didn't play
count,
all their players. Whatever. Oh, my goodness. I just hope people understand what I have to work with. I mean, it's
first NFL game since Nebraska plays Iowa, I'll make sure to give you a big, fat minus for JS and his love of college football.
I will not be watching Nebraska versus Iowa. So you want to start on this. I watched the shows this morning after the Hall of Fame game. Unlike you guys, I watched it. And I'm not going to lie. I watched it, and as I'm watching the Hall of Fame game, I literally texted my buddy, who I have made a bet with, a diehard Steelers fan. His name's Mike. He's tour manager for Luke Bryan.
Tomlin?
Not him. And I made a bet earlier this year that I believe the Steelers are going to definitively finish third in the NFC North. And AFC North, excuse me. In the AFC North. And we got a big dinner riding on this. And I'm watching the Hall of Fame game last night, and I text him. I'm like, Haskins sucks. And I turn on the TV this morning, and then people are talking about the Cowboys' depth at quarterback behind Dak Prescott is so bad. What's Dallas going to do? And is Pittsburgh last night? Did Haskins prove that he can beat out Rudolph for the backup job to Big Ben? And then and I'm like, guys, it's the Hall of Fame game. I'm on a sports show. I know I just knocked Caroline. She loves the NFL. I'm on a sports show with people that literally talk 20 hours of sports a week, and they didn't even watch the Hall of Fame game. And that's not a knock on them, but it is the reality of the Hall of Fame game. So I'm at Titans practice today, and I'm watching, again, completing essentially the second week of practice. And I'm doing everything that I've done. Guy makes a play, plus one. Guy makes a bad play, minus one. And I'm sprinting today because out of nowhere, Vrabel called for a field goal. As they were in the middle of 11-on-11, they did the fire drill where everybody runs on, everybody runs off in case, you end yourself at a half or a game. We all know the fire drill. Get the bleep off the field. Get the field goal unit on. Guys counting down 8 seconds. And I got to sprint underneath the goalpost so I can tell everybody out there good or miss. And
you are very good at that job.
Well, I mean, I take it seriously. I mean,
you should.
If I'm going to be out there, I might as well do it right. So anywho, I'm out there at practice today, and it just kind of hit me watching, and that is that the Titans' offense is just not very good at practice. Like, and I know that we're all supposed to be like, this offense this year is going to be unstoppable. I know we're supposed to be like that, but I'm watching practice and I'm like, this offense is not very good. The offensive line's not very good. You know, Tannehill probably would have been sacked a bunch, but they have to slow up and not hit the quarterback, obviously. They got to stay out of his way. And even today in two-minute drill, the first team offense is trying to go right down the field and score a touchdown or kick a field goal to win it. Tannehill throws a ball, hits off of A.J. Brown's shoulder pads, up in the air. David Long Jr. catches it. Game over, you lose. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, what's going on in practice? Should we feel good that the Titans' defense is outplaying the Titans' offense? Because that's what it's been for me through 2 weeks. Now, Tannehill, yeah, Tannehill's balling out. And Tannehill even said today that he's forcing the ball a little bit in training camp, and as he gets closer, then he's going to cut back on the risks that he takes. And considering that Tannehill's one of the most efficient passers in the NFL, I kind of tend to agree that that's what's going to happen. But the offense is not very good. And while it'd be easy to say, well, Julio Jones isn't out there, and Derrick Henry is not out there, and Josh Reynolds is not out there, and today Taylor Lewan was barely out there, and Roger Saffold, Ben Jones, and Nate Davis weren't out there, it'd be easy to say those guys not being out there, you would expect the defense to be better than the offense. But Bud Dupree's not doing anything in these 11-on-11 contact drills. Caleb Farley is not doing anything in these 11-on-11 contact drills. Danico Autry is in and out and not completely in as far as these 11-on-11 drills. So it's not like the defense has absolutely everybody out there early. So do I look at it and say, hey, this defensive unit the Titans had last year that was abysmal, 29th according to The Athletic last year, in whatever ranking they want to have. I believe they were 28th in points, which is our official metric. I mean, they were horrible last year, and they are looking pretty good. And then there's the other side of it, which is the offense. And I'm thinking, like, they don't look sharp at all. Tannehill's turning the ball over. Guys are getting blown up. The second-round rookie can't get on the field. I mean, it is not pretty right now as far as the offense is concerned. Even today at practice, the ever calm and coach speaking Ryan Tannehill said, yeah, we weren't very good today.
Considering, you know, the day off yesterday, how do you think things went today in terms of being crisp and all that?
Yeah, it wasn't where I wanted to be. You know, we had an opportunity there to go finish off a two-minute drive and win the game with a field goal. We weren't able to do that. Weren't as crisp on third down, had some opportunities and didn't execute on third down. We just got to be better. I think we did a couple good things today, but overall, just didn't have the urgency and the preciseness on the details like I like to see. So definitely a lot of room to improve and look forward to coming back tomorrow and working on those things.
So Tannehill didn't even like it. And to his point, third down, first team offense versus first team defense. First down, each one of these is third down. Third down, John Simon gets a sack. Third down and four, intended for number 80. Now, I put a question mark there because I thought it could have been pass interference. And I asked Joe if he thought it was pass interference, and Joe wasn't sure. And Vrabel said today when I asked him about third downs, the third downs that they did, Vrabel said, you know, we're going to have to look back at the tape to figure out what was a penalty and what wasn't. And I don't get the luxury of looking at the tape. So I thought that could have been P.I., Tannehill, down the field intended for Chester Rogers. Third down and six, Tannehill to Cam Batson, first down. Third down and eight, Tannehill incomplete intended for Ferkser. Third down and eight, Tannehill uses the hard count but gets a false start. Tannehill, by the way, was one that was not happy with himself. Third down and eight, bad snap from 52 Daniel Munyer. And then Tannehill throws a pass that Jeffrey Simmons bats down in the air. So if you're looking at it offensively, he had the one, a third and six complete to Cam Batson. But other than that, the defense absolutely stonewalled him on third down. This is a defense we don't expect to be very good this year. We just hope they're not terrible. So I ask this question to you guys. The defense looks better than the offense. Are we okay with that? knowing what we think of the defense, knowing what we expect out of the offense, are we okay with it on August 6th, knowing there's not a game for another week, knowing there's not a real game for another month, but are we okay with it, or is there at least a little bit of worry that, hey, if you're going to practice, you might as well do it right, and if you're going to have this offense, in which there are some question marks about Julio Jones's health, what do we know there? A new offensive coordinator. I mean, I think that I can look at it both ways, and I use the Hall of Fame game as the example. People on national TV are going on television today and saying, can you believe Dallas's depth at quarterback? Can you think Dwayne Haskins can overtake Mason Rudolph? And all those discussions when those teams played a game yesterday. So how much do we make of it?
I'm not obsessed with the idea that the offense isn't necessarily where it wants to be right now, where Ryan Tannehill wants it to be right now, but I also have to remind myself that it's August 6th and that Julio Jones isn't out there going 100% right now, that there are still some question marks on the offensive line. There are guys who are getting plugged and played in there, and that Taylor Lewan will return when it comes to game time. So while I'm not obsessed with the idea, while it does make me worry, I have to remind myself that it is August 6th. And I do also have to remind myself that that is a little bit encouraging about the defense.
So, see, this is the thing, though. You're basically brushing off the bad of the offense, but excited about the good of the defense.
I'm not brushing off the bad of the offense. I mean, it still concerns me, and it still concerns me that, I mean, we are about a month away, and it concerns me that there could be, like, this could be the identity of the offense, that it's not just like training camp woes, that this could actually be the identity of the offense. That concerns me that possibility is there.
Ian, are you concerned of the fact that the offense really doesn't look very good?
I lean more towards Caroline. I'm not that worried yet. There's still lots of time. I mean, over a month until the start of the regular season. And you pretty much said most of the players that they will be relying on offense are not in, especially today, right? How many offensive linemen were out?
Dylan Radins, who I don't even think right now, if they played a game tomorrow, would be active. Dylan Radins was out there when Tannehill was out there.
So we might
not
have to
tell you where he was, but I'm going to tell you he was out there when Tannehill was out there. Mm-hmm. So that gives you a sense of it.
So we might have to take today with a little bit of a grain of salt.
So they got into the two-minute drill, and Tannehill got, I believe, one crack at it, and Logan Woodside got a crack at it. Tannehill complete to Firkser for a gain of 9. Tannehill incomplete intended for Chester Rogers, though there was a hit to the helmet there, and I thought they could have called it. False start, which brought up a 3rd and 6. Tannehill complete to Cam Batson for a big game. Tannehill complete to A.J. Brown for a gain of 11, 17 seconds on the clock. Tannehill throws one to A.J. Brown off the shoulder pad, tipped into the air, intercepted by David Long Jr. To which point, Vrabel then immediately called roughing the passer, which is obviously impossible in a drill where you're not allowed to hit the quarterback. Vrabel called roughing the passer. And I said to somebody there, I go, Lord help us. If that defense gets a game-winning interception and there is a roughing the passer, Lord help us on Titans Monday, because I'm going to be just all over the wall the next day. So Vrabel calls roughing the passer. They bring out Tucker McCann, who missed wide to the right. Now, he kicked on it. I'm trying to describe this. They have two sets of goalposts. They have your normal goalpost, which is on the far end, where I believe McCann was perfect today. I can check my notes. I think McCann was perfect today, and Ficken missed one wide right. But then they have, like, these shorter goalposts where you can see what the outside would be like, but it's in narrower to kind of make it tougher. And he definitely missed on kind of the narrower field goalpost. Would it have been good on a regular one? I don't think so. So, not a good sign. With that two-minute drill. I mean, the offense just doesn't look very good. And the defense, I will give the defense credit. The defense looks like they are communicating better. It looks like everybody kind of fits a role. They're not perfect. The defense makes mistakes. And again, you can't hit the quarterback. So if you can't hit the quarterback, which is the biggest problem the Tennessee Titans have, I don't know if you're going to be any good. Bud Dupree was out there today, but he's not going to hit the quarterback, and he's not doing any of the big-time drills that would give us an idea. I'm just a little concerned right now. I'm just a little concerned that this great offense that we are just putting our hopes on so far at practice hasn't completely been there. 615-737-1025. We'll get your reaction to it. And I understand you guys can't see what I'm seeing at practice. You guys have to listen to what I say or Jim Wyatt writes or Joe Rexroad says on Robbie and Rexroad. You're going to have to do that. But right now, the offense, you heard from Tannehill. He did not like what they did today. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. And again, I know it's practice. And unlike, say, a Preds game, I've always had this bone to pick with people who cover the Predators sometimes, which is they'll tell you a Tuesday night game against St. Louis is a big game. Then they'll lose. I'll get worked up about it, and people will say, oh, it's only one game. Well, you can't tell me it's a big game and then lose it and then be like, that's fine. Now, look, it's practice. Like, it's not like the Titans are saying, hey, come to practice every day, Jared, and it is a big practice. I mean, they're not saying that. I'm the one who's at practice and investing my time to be there, so when I'm at practice, I expect to see good stuff. And you're practicing against yourself, so maybe it's good that it gives us a little hope for the defense. But I think I've seen now enough to say that I just don't feel as great about the offense as everybody else does, the way that we're supposed to feel. 615-737-1025. There is an element that I alluded to about the offense and the fact that the good players aren't out there. But is that a problem? We'll discuss next. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app. How can you get better as an offense knowing that you're going to need those guys this season?
Yeah, I mean, of course those guys are going to play quality snaps for us, but the guys that are out there practicing are going to play a lot of quality snaps for us too, you know? It's football. Guys are going to go down. We're not probably going to have everybody for all 17-plus games. That's just an unfortunate reality of football is guys are going to get dinged up. So everyone that's out there needs to compete and do what they can to get better each and every day. I think it doesn't really matter who's out there. Whoever's out there, we need to be able to compete and improve and get better each and every day.
Ryan, coach talk Tannehill saying, hey, I know Derrick Henry's not out there. Julio Jones is not out there. Taylor Lewan, Roger Saffold, Ben Jones, Nate Davis, Josh Reynolds, Ty Sambrylo, they're not out there, I know, but hey, we're not going to have all of our guys out there, and we need to step it up. We need to bring out the best, and we need to... Okay, all right. So that's great, but at some point, don't you expect if you're going to beat the Seattle Seahawks in Week 2 that it's going to be because of Derrick Henry or Julio Jones or Taylor Lewan or those guys? I asked Vrabel the same question about the fact that none of the offensive players outside of Tannehill, A.J. Brown, Anthony Ferguson, and maybe one of these guys who's going to play right tackle is out there. And the fact that Derek doesn't really practice, Julio doesn't really practice, Taylor Lewan doesn't really practice. How do you get better? What do you do? I asked Vrabel. Here's what he said.
How important is it to practice when you're trying to get the offense better, but certain guys aren't out here? I know each guy is on an individual plan. But how does the offense as a whole get better when so many key pieces are missing?
I mean, there's going to be times during the season where we don't have guys, and we've been through that. So we got to get the next guy ready and continue to push through and see who takes advantage of their opportunities and who goes back out there and who works with whatever group. So, we'd like to have everybody, but the reality of that happening throughout the year is probably not likely. So We'll just coach the guys that show up and that can practice each day.
How much do we make of this, the fact that the Titans don't push their veteran offensive players to practice? And does it, again, I'm sitting here thinking about the fact that if the strength of this team is going to be the offense, then they need to get in sync. I don't think Julio Jones needs to practice every day. I don't think Derrick Henry needs to practice every day. I think they need to practice a little bit. And I think they need to be in sync. And I think they need to be on the same page. And I think they need to be ready to go week one. And I think they better be, I don't foresee Vrabel playing them a lot in the preseason. So what do we make of the fact that the offense, Henry has done nothing at training camp. Julio Jones has done nothing except drop a touchdown pass and then go into the locker room hurt and never to be seen from again. Josh Reynolds works out on the elliptical like it's a residence inn by Marriott and not a team football practice facility. I mean, at what point do we look at this and say, you know what, with a new offensive coordinator and a team that is going to rely heavily on the offense, they need to get out there and start practicing.
You mentioned the new offensive coordinator, and also with Josh Reynolds and Julio Jones being two really big and important parts of this offense and being new. That concerns me because you can create chemistry off the field, and that's very important as well.
Sure.
But when it comes to putting your pads on and actually going out there and practicing plays and making chemistry on the field, that is so much more important. So I think that's the biggest thing that concerns me, is not having those reps out on the field together. Because, I mean, you can do conditioning, you can work out, you can stay in shape, that for sure, that's important as well. But being out there on the field, working out kinks, making those mistakes when they don't matter, so you don't make those mistakes when they do matter.
But does it matter a month going up to the first game? And here's where I'm a little split. Because even though there's a basic offense and an install that will happen, first of all, Josh Reynolds probably already knows the basic offense. He was here for OTAs and he played in the Ram system, which is incredibly similar to this one. Julio Jones probably knows what he needs to know because he played in a similar system under Kyle Shanahan in Atlanta. He's a veteran and he was here at the end of the offseason program. And again, I think Julio is probably the kind of guy who doesn't really learn what he doesn't need to know, but he definitely will learn what he needs to know. We know Derrick Henry knows the offense. We know Taylor Lewan knows how to play left tackle in this offense. They're going to change what they do, though, every week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like the install that they're telling, that they're teaching Des Fitzpatrick right now, that Des Fitzpatrick needs to learn, is really going to be plays that they call come week one against the Arizona Cardinals. My guess is if they were getting ready for the Arizona Cardinals, the practices would be a lot lighter. You know, you wouldn't have the thumping that you're having right now with the pads on, and Derrick Henry's out there. And it's, okay, when we do this, we want Derek to go this way. I say that while also saying, don't you need to be conditioned? And isn't the way to get conditioned to practice in training camp? I mean, if practice is not important, then why does Tannehill do it? If practice is not important, why does A.J. Brown do it? I get why Anthony Firkser obviously is practicing, but I mean, it's hard for me to sell that practice matters when you tell Derrick Henry he doesn't need to do it. You tell Julio Jones he doesn't need to do it. You tell Taylor Lewan he doesn't need to do it. Today, Saffold, Jones, Davis didn't need to do it. Josh Reynolds, again, has been on the elliptical for a month, or I say a month, for 2 weeks. I mean, it just, I guess I look at it and I think, okay, how much does August 6th practice matter? I mean, it matters to me because I was at it today and I saw it. How much does it matter to you? And I was thinking about this, which is, as a kid, you know, things were different. There wasn't Twitter. The internet was there, but it wasn't what it is now. And I remember I used to read every website every day that covered the Titans. And I'd listen on the radio. And I remember when Terry McCormick, for example, was at the City Paper, and they'd bring him on to say what happened at practice. And I'd listen. And I take that to heart when it comes to covering practice this year, following this team, because I feel like it's the opportunity for every little kid like me who is obsessed with the Titans and every fan like you to sit back and say, okay, I wasn't at practice. You tell me what happened at practice. And so that's what I want to do, is I want to use the real estate that I have 4 hours on a popular show to kind of lay out, all right, here's what went down at practice so that all of you people that couldn't see it now know. But at the same time, I also watch practice and I form my own opinions like I would a game, and I'm seeing certain things happen that I'm like, okay, help me understand this. I get the idea that, hey, come the regular season, there are guys that are going to be out and we're going to have to adjust on the fly, and I get it. I remember Nick Westbrook Akina catching a pass at the end of the Ravens game. I remember Khalif Raymond getting bumped for the interception that cost you the game. And I remember Ryan Tannehill on a 3rd-and-2 ignoring a wide-open Cam Batson that could have won you the game. I know. But at the same time, I look at this and think, if Henry's not out there and Julio's not out there and Lewan's not out there, Are those guys really going to be ready to play week one against Arizona? Like, really be in shape to play the kind of football you want to play come week one against Arizona? That's all I'm saying. And that's where I think, I get it. Farley, coming off the back injury, you don't want to give him too much. And they give Farley a little bit more every day. Dupree, coming off the knee injury, didn't really do a lot today. I get it. You want Dupree to kind of come back and do a little. But, I mean, to trade a second-round pick and take on a $15 million contract and then have the guy barely practice, is he really going to be ready for week one? I mean, maybe he will be. I mean, everybody told me Clowney was staying in shape, and then Clowney got out there to start the year, and the guy was clearly not in shape. And that defense was clearly not in shape come week one on the road in the high altitude of Denver. So I'm just telling you what a concern is for me, who sits there and watches the practice every day, and I just see too many guys out. And I get it. I mean, I'm looking through my notes. Again, two-minute drill. And Tannehill is throwing the ball to Firkser, okay? Throwing the ball to Chester Rogers. Chester Rogers might not even make the team. The biggest gain he had in the two-minute drill was to Cam Batson. I don't think Cam Batson is going to make the team. So I just wonder, I mean, if you got a new offensive coordinator and you know your offense has to be good, don't you at some point need these guys to practice? Don't you need them to be in shape? And you can't sell me on how important practice is, which is what every coach does. Vince Lombardi used to have the old saying, practice doesn't make perfect, perfect practice makes perfect. You can't sell me on how important practice is and then tell half the team, yeah, take it off. But maybe it works for him. I don't know. 615-737-1025. We'll get to your reaction. 615-737-1025. And the one reason why getting in shape on the fly, for the offense especially, concerns me. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is a Fireball Hot Take Friday. You all know I love Fireball Sin Whiskey. 615-737-1025. ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in Sunday. Nashville SC takes on Miami. Pregame 4:45, and the match begins at 5. That's Nashville SC on ESPN 94.9.
How is Julio doing? Any concern with
him? You know what? We're going to be probably cautious with Julio. So the Julio watch, you know, will continue. We'll have a plan for him, but I would anticipate, you know, that he would be, that we would be all on the same page, you know, by the time the season started. You're going to see him out there at times. You're going to see him on the other field. And so he's played a lot of games, and that's kind of where we're going to be each and every day. So we can kind of all be on the same page, and I won't have to address it every day.
Yeah, that was Mike Vrabel talking about, hey, you know, look, Julio might be out there, he might not be out there, you know, Derek's going to be out there. Don't ask me. But I keep wondering, they're not playing the offensive guys. Is it going to take them a little bit to catch up? Let me give you an interesting stat, and I have no idea why this is this way. But Derrick Henry, and we know they want to limit the contact and they want to limit the handoffs. And what's a handoff on August 6th to Derrick Henry compared to a handoff on January 6th? I would agree. But Derrick Henry is traditionally a slow starter. Yards after contact, we would agree. Derrick Henry, yards after contact is a big deal for him. That's probably what makes him one of the best running backs in the league, is the fact that you give it to that big body and one guy's got a shot at him and Derek's going to knock that guy over, or he's going to slide away from that guy, or he's not going to give you a clean shot at him. Yards after contact, I think, is a pretty big stat when it comes to Derrick Henry. Early in last season, week one, 1.6, week two, 1.9, week three, 2.8, week four, 1.5. Against the Steelers, maybe the best defense they played, 1.7. Then once you get into October and November, Derrick Henry, 3.1, 2.6, 3.6, 3.2, 3.1, shockingly 1.1 against the Browns, although he fumbled and they really didn't give him the ball after that, 2.2, 3.8, 2.2, 3.0. So once you get to October, November, December, Derrick Henry is 3 yards a carry after contact. September of last year, and it wasn't like they were playing the Tom Brady, New England Patriots in those September games. It was the Jags and the Vikings and the Broncos and, you know, the real crap teams. 1 point whatever yards after contact. You don't think that has anything to do with the fact that maybe it takes a guy like Derek a couple of shots in the mouth before he's really ready to get up to his level of play? And the reason I bring this up is I would agree, football's all about the long haul, and we've talked about this season, and it's all about the playoffs. But the first month of the year offers you the opportunity to bury Indianapolis. And if Jacob Eason is their starting quarterback, and they go out there and they lose to Seattle and the Rams, which I think they're going to, and then they play you week three, it does you no good if you lose to Arizona and Seattle. So now it does you no good. So the fact that you're getting wins because Indianapolis has no players doesn't matter, because you're not winning your own games, because you're not ready to play in September, because you don't practice your guys. And I'm not criticizing Vrabel. I think people are going to listen to my tone, or it's more of like a devil's advocate thing here, which is maybe practice these guys a little bit, maybe get everybody on the same page in a system. And again, they say they have a plan, and I'm not going to say, I'm not dumping on Vrabel today. I'm just saying I watch practice and I see the offense behind, and I'm thinking, do you want the offense behind knowing how important the beginning of your season is going to be? The other side of that coin, though, is maybe this is part of their plan to give the defense some confidence. A defense that last year had no confidence. That everybody spent all offseason saying, how are you guys going to get better? Because once you lose all confidence in your defense, you don't really gain it back. So maybe they're using early part of training camp, telling Josh Reynolds, hey, stay on the elliptical, Josh. Telling Taylor Lewan, hey, stay on the bike, Taylor. Derek, get to the sand pit. Julio, stay inside. Just kind of, you know, get the defense some confidence, which is why Anthony Firkser is not on the bike and is not in the sandpit, because they want him to get confidence and a relationship with Tannehill, knowing that he's going to be the starting tight end. So I know I just talked out of both sides of my mouth, but I'm not dumping on Vrabel. I'm just looking at this thinking, does this add up? So everything I'm saying is with a question mark at the end. But again, you got an opportunity to bury Indianapolis in the first month and a half of the season, and I think they have to be ready to do it. It's Fireball Hot Take Friday, which means it's your day, so let's get to your text, 615-737-1025. Text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What do we have?
DeMario in Nashville says, I don't care right now. It's early and happy to see defense doing well. Also, our defense mostly knows our offensive tendencies. Titans are running our offense against our defense, so defense is seeing the same stuff every day. I worry if offense is bad first week in September before week one game. But at that point, I think it's too late.
Well, so here's where I think the panic would set in. If you go to Tampa Bay in 2 weeks, and I will be there at practice out at Tampa Bay, and you see your defense get dominated by Brady, which it should be. I mean, and this is if Tampa Bay, and I don't know what their practice schedule looks like as far as how many days off they give guys. But if Brady and – there's two things – if Brady and Evans and Godwin and A.B. and Gronk and Brate and Fournette and Ronald Jones and Keyshawn Vaughn, if they just are just killing the Titans' first-team defense, then I think we should be alarmed. And if, on the other field, if Tannehill and his group is not – and look, let's be honest. The Bucs have a great defense and a great offense, and they are the defending Super Bowl champions. But I do think it amps up a little bit if we get to those Bucs practices and the Titans don't look good on offense and the defense doesn't look improved. Then I think the panic should start to set in, because now you're going up against another team. So it's not, well, even though that's our offense doing poorly, it's our defense that's succeeding. So yay. And you can't do that when you practice against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Fair. And Andrew texts in the text line and says, wow, our offense looks mediocre without all of the superstars. Shocking. Stop worrying. I think I'm less concerned about maybe the offense not looking so hot today. I mean, of course, that does have a little bit of a worry. My biggest concern here is the superstars not practicing and not getting those reps. Because, yeah, I mean, to the texter's point, the offense isn't going to look elite when your elite wide receiver is not in there, when your elite running back is not in there. Of course, they're not going to be up at the top echelon of what this offense can be. But my biggest concern stems from just the inexperience that they're experience that they are not getting in practice right now.
So I just think that, again, like, you want to put Todd Downing in a situation to succeed. I mean, last year, the way it played out with Clowney, that was not conducive to helping Shane Bowen succeed. To wait it out until the very end and then sign Clowney right before the first game, maybe it saved you a couple of million bucks, but Clowney was out of shape and he wasn't ready for what you threw at him. And because he was out of shape, he was ineffective. And then he got hurt because he's Clowney, and that's what Clowney does, is Clowney gets hurt. And then he gets hurt, and then, okay, so like it starts to add up. And I think that that is something I want to avoid this year with the offense. I mean, Ian, you remember when we used to bag on Vrabel for not practicing guys, and we called him Coach Cautious. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I do think there is a method to the madness, but I would just kind of like to understand it maybe a little bit more. Other than, hey, you know, it's a long season. Guys have to have breaks. Because I will say this about Vrabel. Vrabel played for Bill Cowher and Bill Belichick. And I can promise you, back in those days, with pads in every practice and two-a-day practices, and I can promise you those coaches valued practice. I can tell you that those guys looked at practice every day like, oh, yes, it's practice.
I was listening to one of the press conferences. Sorry to cut you off there.
Wait, go ahead.
But it sounds like they used like those GPS things.
So they used the GPS things.
And they like track that like extra sports science stuff that I'm not sure obviously didn't exist however many years ago. And I don't know, you know, how long it took to convince coaches that that stuff actually matters. But it sounds like Vrabel does think it matters a little.
So I think it was about, instead of testing out like what their conditioning level was, like instead of having a conditioning test, they can just see how fast these guys go, and that can tell them, you know, whatever have you. I just know this. Coaches either just swear by their sports performance, sports science departments, or they just dump all over it. And I've seen both of that. I think Vrabel is probably more of the, hey, let's listen to the sports science guys. Let's do this. Let's do that. But where were the sports science guys last year with the defense that was out of shape come week one at Denver? Where were they? That's my issue. 615-737-1025. We'll get to more of your texts. Plus, Bud Dupree made an appearance today at practice. And I'm not going to do what everybody else does. And I know this is going to cramp on everybody else's style. And there are things that sometimes I say, they get people maybe a little worked up with me or to not like me. But I'm just going to keep it real as far as Bud Dupree is concerned. But it was still a big deal. I'll explain next. Stillman & Company right here. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in to Sounds Baseball tonight on ESPN 94.9 as the Sounds take on Toledo, the AAA affiliate of the Tigers at First Horizon Park. Pregame with Jeff Hem is at 6:50. First pitch, 7:05. Sounds Baseball is presented by 312 Pizza Company and Farm Bureau Health Plans. This weekend at First Horizon Park, Toledo, 7 o'clock. And on Sunday, which will be right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, 6:15 start for the good guys. By the way, Saturday Sounds game, Caroline Fenton is throwing out the first pitch.
Booyah.
So
let's get to the Bud Dupree stuff, and then let's talk about Caroline's first pitch, because I think we should carve out some time for that as well. Fireball Hot Take Friday at Stillman & Company on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're streaming on the Game Nashville app.
You're getting close, or was it a little bit of a surprise when they gave you the go-ahead today?
I mean, personally, like my body, how I feel, you know, I already knew I was close. I've been ready. My knees holding up pretty good. The doctor did a great job. Rehab went great. So, you know, that aspect of it is behind me. But now it's just, you know what I'm saying, staying on top of that. You know, also just going out here with these guys, like I said, getting the communication down, because it's a whole different communication than what I'm being used to. So I want to make sure that my above-the-net game is great. And then now I can go out and just fly around.
That was Bud Dupree talking to the media after his first practice. I don't know about you, but this morning, he's getting the morning workout in pre-practice, and I see on Twitter, Bud Dupree active. I was like, whoa now. I was like,
life
okay.
Comes at you fast.
Now we're cooking. Bud Dupree, Fireball Hot Take Friday. And I thought about it this way. I went on the show after practice with Chase, and he asked me about Dupree. Because one thing I'm not going to do, Caleb Farley, now he got into some more drills today, like where they actually, he was on a wide receiver and a quarterback threw a football. But there's no way you can watch what Farley has done this week and been like, that, oh boy, I'll tell you, Farley, he's got the direction and the hit. No. Like, you can't just watch a guy run with Racy McMath and decide whether or not the guy's going to be able to cover DeAndre Hopkins week one. Because that's what really matters. Or DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett week two. You're not going to be able to tell that. Bud Dupree, in my opinion, didn't really do anything. He did the one-on-one drills, like the warm-up drills or whatever, and he and Vrabel kind of got together, and Vrabel kind of showed him some technique or something. And then he did the seven-on-seven. But when he did the seven-on-seven, he lined up. And then as soon as the ball was snapped, he'd take a knee. So he didn't do anything. But I would say this. This is why I told Chase, and this is why I would say about the importance of Bud Dupree. The fact that Bud Dupree and Caleb Farley are out there, they are on the active roster, they are in pads, is a great sign. And here's why it's a great sign. Who is the team that we have spent months and months and months talking about outside of the Titans? If you had to say the team that we probably discussed the most in reference to competing with the Titans this year, who would it be?
The Colts.
And what happened to them this week?
Injuries, injuries, injuries.
They lost their starting quarterback and they lost the best player on their team. Dan Dockich was on the midday show. I actually heard it in their, you know, midday mashup or whatever they call that at the end of the week. Dan Dockich said that with the Colts, if they say day to day, it's month to month. If they say week to, no, if they say day to day, it's a week. If they say week to week, it's a month. If it's month to month, it's a year. That's how the Colts treat things. So when they say 5 to 12 and you got people on TV saying, well, this could be 5 weeks. Dan Dockich, who covers the team and is there every day saying, I don't know, you can't trust Colts. Now, Dan's a blowhard, so, you know, Dan could be just talking a bunch of trash. But I feel pretty confident that those two guys are not going to be playing week one, especially Wentz. So you look at the team you compete with the most, and they lose their starting quarterback, so their most important player, and they lose Quentin Nelson, their best player. And you get your number one draft choice and your big free agent acquisition that has to come in here to save the team. I always love this. When a team is missing something and you invest a large sum of money or resources like draft picks into somebody else, and then we'll say, should this person be the savior? Coaches and fans, and they'll come out and they'll say, shouldn't be the savior. I'll remember when I was doing a show in the ESPN studios in New York City, and we had a topic the day after Matt Duchene signed with the Predators, which was, is Matt Duchene going to be the savior? And people got mad. Oh, my goodness. Don't talk about that. Don't talk about, is Matt Duchene going to be the savior? Well, for $56 million, that's really what they needed. And the fact that Matt Duchene hasn't been the savior is why a lot of you all don't like him now. Bud Dupree, and I've been covering Bud Dupree, not consistently, but I've been covering Bud Dupree since 2013 when he was at Kentucky and I was on the radio in Louisville. So I've seen Bud Dupree as a puppy. And now I see Bud Dupree now and I'm like, man, he is a grown-ass man. But Bud Dupree was signed to be the savior. He was signed to save the pass rush. He and Danico Autry were signed to help Jeffrey Simmons, help Harold Landry, to get that pass rush in order, to save that secondary, to get the offense back on the field, to get the defense off the field on third down. Bud was signed for that. And Bud said during OTAs, he knows that's what he was signed for. Farley out on the field. Do I think Farley they trust right now to go up against Tyler Lockett or DK Metcalf? I don't think so. But now that he's out there, it gives me hope that they can coach him up and get him ready for when he does have to go out there against DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett or DeAndre Hopkins or Michael Pittman Jr. or T.Y. Hilton. So, I mean, I look at the news today, Bud Dupree's out there. I'm not going to try to sell you that he was, you know, Bud was out there and he looked great. He didn't do anything. Farley, for the most part, hasn't done anything. But hey, just having them out there and comparing it to the situation of the panic or the fear of when are these guys going to get out there, or comparing it to what Indianapolis is going through, I will gladly take that. So I think it's a big deal Bud Dupree was out there today. What's our text line say? 615-737-1025. I promise to get back to him. What do we have?
One texter texts in and says, you can't really judge the offense without Henry, Brown, Jones, and half the offensive line. At this point, you're judging Tannehill with a C squad versus the defense first team.
So I have two thoughts on that. First off, in the Ravens game last year, Tannehill had the C squad out there. How'd he do?
Not so hot.
Third and two. And I can show you the tape. Third and two. Game of... Caroline, I don't know if you remember this because you weren't covering the Titans. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you watched the game.
Yeah.
Because it's not like it's the Hall of Fame game, which you would just ignore. Take yeah, your no, mental health just... dinner night off and not watch the one
Excuse
football game.
Excuse me for eating dinner.
February.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you watched it. Third and two. Do you remember when Mike Vrabel punted on fourth and two in that game?
Yes.
Okay. So everyone crushed Vrabel for punting on fourth and two, as they probably should have. Third and two, Jonnu Smith dropped a pass. It was a crossing. And the two Ravens defenders went with Jonnu Smith. Cam Batson stood in the middle of the field and basically did a jumping jack. And Tannehill threw the ball to Jonnu Smith. Now, for what I know of Tannehill and what I love about Tannehill, that's not Tannehill's game. Tannehill's game is find the open guy. I don't care who it is. Get it to him. It can be Rashad Davis like it was at the end of the season in 2019 when the guy was activated off the practice squad to catch punts. And all of a sudden, Tannehill's firing a 45-mile-an-hour fastball at him for a 20-yard gain. That's just how he is. And so Cam Batson standing in the middle of the field doing jumping jacks, there's one safety up top who maybe stops Batson from the end zone. But if he does, it's probably at the 4 or the 5-yard line. You score a touchdown, probably tie the game with the Ravens, and now you got a ball game. Now Lamar has to go out and beat you in the fourth quarter. But Tannehill just didn't throw him the ball. So that told me that in that moment, Tannehill was locked in on Jonnu Smith, the one guy that he trusts, which I'm sure every quarterback probably does in big moments. But that, to me, tells you that Tannehill wants to throw the ball to his guys. So the idea of Tannehill and the C-squad, it doesn't matter. Well, they told me, hey, in a game, you never know what's going to happen, both he and Vrabel. And that was a situation they found themselves in against the Ravens. So I don't know. Is Julio hurt? I mean, nobody knows if Julio's healthy. And if anybody tells you they know if Julio's healthy, they're lying. Unless their name is Mike Vrabel. I saw it like NFL Network. It said, Ian Rappaport updates us on Julio Jones. Ian Rappaport doesn't know. By the way, I do love it. So Ian Rappaport got yelled at by Vrabel today because Taylor Lewan was on the bike and Rappaport went over and was like talking to him and Vrabel saw it. And I mean, Vrabel was not very happy.
Get away from him.
Basically, but in a much harsher tone. And so like there was this whole bit on NFL Network today where Ian Rappaport went up to Vrabel and apologized and they like laughed about it or whatever. And I saw that and I was wondering, so when's Ian Rappaport going to apologize to me?
Okay.
Forget for all
Did you call him out today?
I did not. What am I going to do? Go up to him and say, hey, you got the report wrong. I already told him you got the report.
How are our reports going, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not.
Need to double check anything else for you?
I mean, I did think about saying like, hey, man, like you really porked me on that Tannehill thing because everybody and their grandma lost their bacon over it. But I mean, again,
whole lot of pork references there.
You know, for someone who doesn't eat it.
Yeah,
I
right.
Mean, it's, yeah. You know, whole other, but I mean, I forgot what the point I was making about Ian Rappaport before that. But, yeah, no, it would have been nice.
Something about Julio Jones. Updates on Julio Jones.
It said updates on Julio Jones. They don't know. They're not telling Ian Rappaport. Trust me. There's not. Nobody knows if he's healthy. So this idea about, well, you know, it'll be fine come the season. Maybe. Maybe it will be. But I don't know that. Which is why I feel so much better now about Dupree and Farley because they're out there. So 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Josh Allen has signed a massive contract. You see this?
I did, yes.
Massive contract for Josh Allen. And I will tell you, this is good news for the Titans, and I will explain why next. Stillman and Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday, it's ESPN 1025 The Game.